Welcome back to the big show. My name is Mike Petrelli, joined this week by one of our favorite guests, co-host Jeremy Harmon. Jeremy, what's going on?
Oh, you know, just keeping it real here in Indiana.
Coming for us live from the Midwest on his way to the grocery store. To talk a little bit about directors. So we were thinking about the topics this week, and this is close to almost a year and a few months that we've been on the air, and we've pretty much covered a lot of shit. But one thing that Jeremy and I have not covered together is a little topic called best directors. So what I thought tonight we would do is to look into the world of directing and see basically what directors have made that we feel is their best, and maybe what their worst films are. So what I figured out was that we would throw out a plethora of different directors out there and say, maybe somebody that Jeremy likes, maybe somebody that we both can agree on, and maybe somebody that I don't particularly like at all. So let's delve into the world of directing and see if we can beat these people down into their worst moments and their best moments. How's that? So I kind of came up with this idea after I saw Exodus, Gods, and Kings this week. And I realized that Ridley Scott has made a lot of great films, and just to pan him for one below average film like Exodus, Gods, and Kings, I should probably take a step back and reminisce about the things that he's done well. So actually, let's start off with Ridley, if you don't mind, Jeremy.
No, please. Actually, I'm happy about this one.
So if you can think about the worst film that Ridley has made, and I know you haven't seen Exodus, and it may not be your worst, but and it's really not my worst, but what would you say Ridley's low point in his career was?
Jesus. He's done some shitty things, man. Like really shitty. I thought Hannibal was a joke. I thought I hated Gladiator. Is that a low point? I don't think it's a low point. I'd have to go with Prometheus. I think for a movie that had maybe the best trailer I've seen in the last 10 years, it was a real, just a fucking turd bomb. I have to admit, post Blade Runner, I just don't really like much of anything that he's done. I like Thelma and Louise. I think that's a pretty great movie. G.I. Jane is a real shithole of a movie.
1492, The Quest of Paradise? That was a gem.
I'm gonna say that I have not seen that one.
Oh, just count your lucky stars.
Should have let Christopher Columbus direct it, for Christ's sake. It's his namesake, you know what I mean?
Exactly.
Yeah, so, you know, Alien, Blade Runner, and Thelma and Louise. Black Rain's got some good stuff to it, but the rest of his over it, in all the grand scheme of it all, can flush it. So the fact that Exodus, Gods, and Kings licks doesn't surprise me, because I think he's a shitty director.
Yeah, I'm going to have to go out on a limb and say The Counselor was the worst piece of shit he's ever made.
Whoa.
Hey, you know.
You know what? I love that movie, but I think it's a shitty directing job.
Yeah.
I think that movie has got some really nice nuggets to it, and I think that there's some solid performances. I think it's exceedingly well written. If you're not a Cormac McCarthy fan, chances are that movie's not going to connect with you no matter who directed it. But having read the screenplay ahead of time and then having seen with what Scott did with that movie, that's nobody's fault but Scott's. Yeah. He had all the talent in the world at his disposal, and he had a really incredible script, albeit one that's not terribly Hollywood-esque. And he still fucking dropped the ball. I'm sorry. I do have a soft spot in my heart for The Counselor, but it has nothing to do with his direction.
Yeah, and I don't think he was the right director for it. And I think that's why I have such an issue with the film. And I think you actually stated it exactly the way that I would have stated it myself, was that he wasn't the director to make that movie.
Well, he's had a boner for McCarthy for a long time. He's been trying to get Blood Meridian off the ground for at least the last 10 or 15 years. Thank God he's not got his hands on it, because he'd fuck it up. Although, you know, there's been rumors that it's been Tommy Lee Jones that has the rights to it, and fucking James Franco. But yeah, I would almost rather either of those guys have access to it than Scott, because it's a guaranteed fuck up. He would fuck it up.
Well, if you had to get, all right, we've bashed the man now. What would you give him as his high point?
It doesn't get much better than Alien and Blade Runner. I mean, you want to talk about two? Did he do those back to back? He did. He did those back to back. And basically at the beginning of his career, as far as feature films, he did one other one before that. And I'm just not real sure, especially if you're looking at sci-fi movies there. I don't think there's too many more that are more iconic than those two films, you know, Alien, Spawn, the franchise. And I hear they're making a sequel to Blade Runner, which makes me want to stab somebody. But those movies are, they're fantastic, but he peaked early, obviously, because the rest of the shit that he did after that has been terrible.
Yeah, and he's had a really weird up and down decision on what kind of movies he makes. He goes into historic, and then he goes into the A Good Year. What the fuck was that? Like, it didn't fit into where he was.
Well, I think it's just, you know, he's got a thing for Russell Crowe, and that was right in Crowe's. I guess he was coming out of his high point, right? Gladiator was the big part of his career, 2000, but by 06, when that one came out, he had faded, and he did American Gangster and Robin Hood and Body of Lies with Russell Crowe. So, you know, getting an actor on his downswing, right? None of those movies are really any good.
No.
American Gangster has some decent parts. It does have the RZA from the Wu-Tang Clan, so I'll always give it credit for that. But the others suck. I mean, just... That's the thing with directors working with the same actors. You know, I think that you could probably look at Scorsese and look at his work with DiCaprio, and maybe we'll get to those guys later. But, you know, it starts to get stale after a while. I mean, even Scorsese let De Niro go, right?
Yep.
And frankly, I think he waited too long to cut his ties with Crowe, because Crowe wasn't a bankable star by Robin Hood. And that movie could have been pretty neat, but it just wasn't.
Yeah, I mean, Ridley Scott had a pretty decent run for almost a close decade with Alien, Blade Runner, one of my personal favorite movies, Legend, which a lot of people pan the shit out of it because they don't like Tom Cruise, but I still think it was a fine film for the time that it was made, and I wonder if it was made today, if it would be maybe accepted more.
You have to remember back then, the fantasy as a genre wasn't really a big draw, right? They didn't have the same effects that they have now. I mean, if you take it and put it in the category of Lord of the Rings, it obviously can't even touch anything. So
of course not.
I will admit, Tim Curry as the big devil-looking guy is pretty badass to look at.
Yeah, and it always reminds me of him when I see the Queens of the Stone Age and the... what's Jack Black's band?
Tenacious
D, and that song, The Greatest Song Ever Made, or whatever.
Correct. Yeah, it's very, very similar. You're right.
Perfect. Well, let's move on to Brian De Palma. I'm a huge De Palma fan. He made a lot of really interesting films in the 1980s, I'd say. But after 1989, I think he kind of went down a really weird path. But I think I'll start this one off with De Palma. And I would say that I think his possible best moment would be... God... There's two films, okay, and I'm not sure you're a fan of De Palma the way I am, but I think Scarface and Blowout may be his two best films.
I love Blowout. It's fantastic. I am not a big fan of Scarface at all.
No.
And I think maybe a lot of that has to do with the fact that so many people have glommed onto that for the ridiculous gangster bullshit that goes on, that all the rap guys and all these, you know, fucking thug wannabe people kind of idolize that movie for the Montana character. So I got no love for that one. Frankly, I was bored by it. You know, watch the original.
I can understand that.
I don't know what else to say. I think The Untouchables has one of my all-time favorite lines. And as an Irishman, I obviously like see him, Irish people would depict it quite nicely, but the just like a guinea bring, or just like a wop, I can't remember what a racial epithet thrown towards the Italian, but bringing a knife to a gunfight,
yeah,
that will always make me smile no matter what I do. So I think that's got some spots too. I think Body Double is an interesting movie, but yeah, the if you look at his movies post Untouchables, it's a shit heap.
Oh, yeah. I mean,
it is a shit heap.
Casualties of War is an awful film.
Yeah. Yeah, poor Michael J. Fox.
Yeah, I know. And Sean Penn was in it, too. Yeah. And it was just one of those films that you looked at on the surface. And that's just one of my problems with movies when you look at them from the surface. When you say, oh, my God, look at this cast. I mean, this is the perfect example of a movie that just it had so much potential and so little substance to it.
Right.
And I think the only movie that he made past that post-Untouchables movie that was actually enjoyable was Mission Impossible.
You know, I'm an anti-Cruise guy, so I've not seen it.
Well, the original Mission Impossible film was actually quite enjoyable. The second one that was made by John Woo was even better.
Yeah.
And then the third one with Philip Seymour Hoffman was really quite fantastic, and it was done, I believe, by J.J. Abrams.
I actually saw that one. They did a 24-hour marathon of Seymour's stuff at the Indiana University Cinema here right after he died. And that was one of the ones that I caught at like 4 o'clock in the morning because it was the only time I could get over there. And I was kind of surprised that I liked it despite the fact that Tom Cruise is in it.
Well, and the funny thing is, it's that first scene with Philip Seymour Hoffman basically just telling him, like, I'm going to fucking kill you.
Yep.
And like, that's pretty much the end of your life. And this is how it's going to end. Like, it was just one of those things where it was like, you know, he's a great villain. Yeah. And I think I think he deserves credit by hiring, that grouping of directors after him.
Yeah.
I believe he was part of the Tom Cruise decisions on who would succeed him afterwards. And I think John Woo was a perfect, at the time. I mean, he was say at the time.
I hate John Woo. I'm not going to lie. His stuff in China or Hong Kong that he did is great, but anything he's done here in the United States.
Without a doubt.
I mean, steaming pile of ass.
Hard Target was awful. But, Jean-Claude, man. Jean-Claude.
Can never get enough of Van Damme, man. Come on now.
All right. Well, I want to move into a little bit of the craziness, and this is going to be a tough one for both of us, I think, and that's why I kind of want to get this one out of the way. David Lynch. So I'm trying to go down the list of what his worst would be. And I'm kind of curious to hear what you would think.
Well, to me, what I would say is this. There are a couple of his that I have yet to see. I have not seen Inland Empire. Fire Walk With Me would be the one that I would say, but I'm going to preface that as I've not seen Twin Peaks, the series. So it made absolutely no sense to me when I saw it. I was completely baffled by it. And obviously I didn't connect to it because I didn't have the point of reference. So one that I could say that I've seen that I think is not good is Wild at Heart. I actually hated that movie. Not going to lie. But I will admit that I am a large fan of Blue Velvet. I think it's absolutely stunning. Lost Highway, Mulholland Drive. I think those movies are really incredible. Eraserhead is a head scratcher, but I understand its place and its position and the regard that it's held in. The Elephant Man is pretty amazing as well. But I hated Wild at Heart.
I'm going to maybe make a controversial statement because people that know me know that I'm a big fan of the Dune novel. I really was not a big fan of his version of Dune. And actually, after seeing the documentary that was just recently out of Jodorowsky's Dune, I would much rather have seen that with him in Dolly, than I think the Lynch version of Dune. And again, this may be a situation where if it was released today kind of thing, but I just didn't think that the film worked. It was too short. It didn't really flow the way that I really anticipated seeing it flow. And I can say that that's probably the one that I would say that I was the most disappointed in. I don't know if I'll say it's his worst, but I'll say it's the one I was the most disappointed in.
That makes sense. I know that the people are jacked about, the book to movie adaptations are always tough ones for people who are big fans of the book. And I know that that was a controversial decision to have him direct that. I really wish he would have done Return of the Jedi so we didn't have to see the fucking Ewoks, but you know, that's the way it goes.
So can you imagine, I was going to actually bring that up. Can you imagine his version? I'm actually sitting here right now trying to think of exactly how it would have played out and what would have been crazier about the Return of the Jedi.
I would weep for the fact that I don't get to see that movie ever, because I think it would have been amazing, because I hate that one. So, I mean, I like it because it's much better than the first, the last three that Lucas fucked up, but I hate the Ewok portion of it, and there's some really bad shit in that movie. However, I would have killed to see Lynch's version. I think it would have been amazing.
All right, so what's his best movie?
Gosh, boy, that's a hard one. Blue Velvet has to be my favorite.
Yeah, I was going to say Mulholland Drive.
It's hard to argue with that, because I think that there's an argument for both. Lost Highway is one that I've connected with quite a bit, in fact. For better or worse, it's one of the scariest fucking movies I've ever seen. Lost Highway. I've never felt as creepy, and his movies are creepy as shit all the way around, and they make you feel real dirty after watching them. But Lost Highway, it put me in a spot that I haven't felt maybe ever like.
What was your opinion of him doing that Duran Duran documentary?
I haven't seen it.
I'm just curious to feel, why would he? Okay, there's a lot of bands that I could see David Lynch doing something like that for. I'm not exactly sure I ever pictured Duran Duran being in the top 100. So I kind of wonder if it's just a fan thing or if there was some real reason behind it. I guess we'll maybe never know, but I definitely would love to know why then and why that band.
I wish I could give you an answer.
Not that I have a problem with Duran Duran, of course.
But I love them.
I just think it was a very strange choice. Like, I could see him doing something like Manson-esque or something, or like Modest Mouse or something. Like, I just see him doing something crazy.
Yeah.
I just didn't see Duran Duran. Will you watch the Twin Peaks TV series when it comes back in 2016 just to have an idea of what he's doing now? Or?
Yeah, definitely. And I'm going to watch the full series before it comes back. It's something I've asked for the holidays, so I'll get it. If not, it's on Netflix. The new Blu-ray set that came out has all kinds of extra stuff on it, and it has Fire Walk With Me too, so maybe I get a chance to really understand what the fuck that movie is actually about.
Well, then we will definitely have to have a Twin Peaks show.
Yeah, I'd love to. I mean, I'd love to, and you know, it's, I have the my loved ones that I hold near and dear to me, that whose opinions I respect, think as highly of Twin Peaks as they do of any other thing that there is to watch. So I plan on giving I watched the pilot for a film noir class that I took when I was in college and was intrigued, but at that time it wasn't on Netflix and I didn't have access to it. So I'll get around to seeing it. I've definitely been curious to see what he's going to do with it, because I know a lot of people are very, very concerned that it's going to change the complexion of the original series. So,
yeah, I think that's usually what people feel, is that, you know, you have something that they hold near and dear to their hearts. And even when the original person is getting back involved in it, it's, well, why? Why do we need this?
Right.
I think there's some intrigue sometimes that, well, I want to see what happens next. But there is a reluctancy. Like, to me, I mean, let's be honest, my favorite movie of all time, what we've gone through this in numerous detail, is Back to the Future. I would never want to see a Back to the Future 4. I don't care what happens afterwards. Yeah. Like, there's nothing more to me than that last scene of Back to the Future. I don't need to see it. Just like there's certain shows that you really don't ever want to watch again. Like, I don't think The Wire needs to ever be created again. I think The Wire ended perfectly the way it needed to. So.
Well, unfortunately, that's not the climate that we're living through right now, since, you know, Hollywood is too chicken shit to invest any money into any kind of original material, that they just keep recycling the same shit over and over again and adding sequels to things that don't need sequels. So, you know, I always hope and pray that my favorite things don't fall into that. But, you know, Slapshot is my favorite movie of all time, and they made two sequels to that, and it just whores out.
Oh, yeah.
The original, and I mean, with one of the shitbag Baldwin brothers in it, I mean, it just makes me sick. So yeah, hopefully that won't happen with other material, much like Back to the Future, which I don't think that they could ever do. You know, I was hoping the same thing with Ghostbusters. Although I am fine with an all-female Ghostbusters that doesn't have anything to do with the others. If they're going to do that, then I got no problem with that.
Oh, I don't know about that, but okay. So I'm gonna bring up the controversial director, Roman Polanski.
Polanski, huh?
Yeah. So he's an interesting, because he's done some really shit movies, but he's also done some mildly epic films as well.
Mildly epic. Holy shit, he's done some insane.
Well, I'm using that word loosely. Because he's made some fantastic movies. But so what would be your favorite Roman Polanski movie?
Chinatown, without a doubt. Man, that's a no-brainer to me.
I can't believe you didn't say Pirates. Well,
I've not seen Pirates, nor will I. And he has made some incredible other movies. I think Knife from the Water is for a freshman film, first film. As a feature director, is unbelievably good. Repulsion is creepy as fuck. Cul-de-sac is, I wish more people had seen that one. What an interesting, wonderful, lovely movie. And the Criterion version of it is just brilliant. So I would highly suggest that anybody who hasn't seen a Polanski, check that one out just to see Donald Pleasence as a crossdresser. It's killer. I mean, if you look at how he started from 62 to Chinatown in 74, and even The Tenant in 76, that's as good of a run as you're going to see.
Yeah, like, I mean, Beth, Rosemary's Baby.
Rosemary's Beth. Baby, The Fearless Vampire Killers, Cul-de-Sac, yep. Repulsion, Knife in the Water. I mean, Test in 1979 is even widely regarded as a really great film. Now, if you move into the 99 or to the 90s and the 2000s, you have shit like The Ninth Gate. I mean, give me a goddamn break.
But he did make The Pianist then, and that was...
Yeah, The Pianist was okay. Death and the Maiden is actually a very interesting film. But the Ninth Gate is the glaring, what the fuck were you doing movie in his oeuvre, as far as I'm concerned. Because if really, top to bottom, it's pretty good. I mean, he doesn't miss much. Venus and Fur was kind of shitty this past year. But, and see, The Ghost, that's the one with Pierce Brosnan, right?
Yeah.
I actually really, really, really liked that one. I thought that was actually a really interesting movie.
Yeah, it was interesting, and I didn't have a problem with that one. I think I wasn't a big fan of Oliver Twist.
I didn't see it, so I would stay away from it.
Please stay away from that one.
I think once again, why make it? You know, there's the David Lean version of it that is going to be the iconic version of that film. It's not one you need to, even though that one's a musical. It's just not a movie that you need to make. To me, Dickens doesn't translate to the big screen. I mean, Great Expectations had a couple of adaptations, and I thought the one that Michael Almereyda did with Gwyneth Paltrow and with Ethan Hawke had some interesting parts to it, but the changes made to it was too much for me. So Dickens doesn't, he's much in the same way that Jane Austen. Just that type of literature just doesn't lend itself well to filmic adaptation, because it just takes too much away from the sizable source material that it comes from. I mean, I know Oliver Twist is kind of a small book, comparatively speaking, you know, Bleak House being 15,000 pages long, but I just don't see a reason to do it.
So is his personal controversy take away from his legacy, or do you feel that he's
yes. I mean, yeah. And I feel the same way about Woody Allen, who I absolutely adore. But it's hard to separate the two. There is no gray area with Polanski. It's clear that he did what he was accused of doing, and that's why he will never come back to the United States, because he knows he'll go to prison for it. So with Allen, there's at least a little bit of gray area that we don't really know if that was the case. But clearly Polanski did what he did. And it's hard to respect a man who makes really great films, but who is a fucking child molester. Right. You know?
Exactly.
Out and out child molester. And that's a hard thing to reconcile. And it would be easy if I could separate the art from the man, but it's very, very difficult to do that. I respect the films because they're so good, but it's hard to respect them when he is a lowlife. You know, I have kids. I don't need that shit.
So what was Francis Ford Coppola's shining moment?
Coppola. Now, I'm going to go. I think he has two movies that I think are head and shoulders his finest, and it's Apocalypse Now and The Conversation.
Hmm.
And I know that those are choices that few people would make. And that's not to take anything away from The Godfather or Godfather Part Two, which is, I think, the better of the films.
Agreed.
Godfather Three, on the other hand, is not so good.
No.
But I, to me, the conversation, when taken in context of when it was made, he made that the same year he made Godfather Part Two. One needs to remember that. Capturing the paranoia of the 70s, right? Parallax View, there's a lot of those movies that kind of came out at the same time that kind of had that same vibe. I didn't think that one did the best, not to mention the fact that the cast was just unfucking real from top to bottom, from Duvall's character, from Frederick Forrest, from what's her name, from the Vernon Shirley, to John Cazale, and Hackman is outstanding. I mean, it's just outstanding as a character. Harry Call as a performance, you know, the way he used his camera, the way he integrated the music and all the sound design that went into that. It was just something that you kind of saw Lucas do with THX 1138, but kind of put it on steroids. So I really, really appreciate that film more than most of his. And then Apocalypse Now, to me, is I think the best war movie ever made. The only other one I think that I think could compare to it is, well, I take it back. The Thin Red Line, I think, is the best war movie ever made.
Agreed.
Apocalypse Now and MASH would be the others that I would say.
I'm a big fan of The Big Red One. So
yeah, same as Foley. It's a good one. I like that one too.
I think my most disappointing film for Francis Ford Coppola was The New York Stories, because I think he did that with Woody Allen and
Scorsese. And you know what, Michael? I am 100% in agreement with you. That vignette in that is a total piece of shit. And he's done some bad stuff.
Yeah.
He's done some bad stuff. That Dracula adaptation was just worthless. But I was actually angry the first time I watched that. I was like, this is so fucking bad.
It was almost like a gimmick. And it was like, it really annoyed the shit out of me, because you had such hope that, like, the three of the 80s, like, most important directors, well, three of the most important directors, were making a film together. And it was like, okay, there's so much to have hope for. And it was literally one of the biggest pieces of dog shit I've ever seen.
Yeah, it was really bad. And I think what maybe makes it stand out even more is the fact that Scorsese's portion of that is so unbelievably good, and Allen's is really crazy funny, and it just didn't live up. I mean, when the producers were putting that together, they should have looked at it and said, Jesus, this just doesn't fit. This is a bad move putting it up here, because it's going to look so bad, and it did. It's just bad.
Yeah, and I will definitely agree with you on Apocalypse Now, but I would have to go with The Godfather Part Two. Again, that is the best of the trilogy, and it's the quintessential film that I believe of Francis Ford Coppola's semi-storied career.
I think he's doing some pretty interesting things lately, though. I thought Tetro was really, really interesting. Youth Without Youth was also a very interesting film. And I have yet to watch Twixt. I've had that for a couple of years, and I keep it's like on my pile of movies to watch. Like, I have to get to this at some point in time, and I just never gotten around to it. But I am curious to see his take on the horror genre, because I think he's kind of dabbled in that with Apocalypse Now and some of the parts of The Godfather before.
Yeah.
So I am curious to see it, but I really thought Tetro was a wonderful movie.
I'll have to check it out. I haven't actually had a chance to see that.
You should check that one out. And yeah, it's a shame. If he had the Megalopolis, the movie that he was, this big, huge blockbuster movie that he had been hoping to get like $180 million funding for, that never came to fruition. It's a shame. You know, that's one of those movies that we'll probably never see, that people kind of lament that he didn't get done at the height of his career. Because it sounds really interesting. You can find all kinds of stuff about it on the web, but it's interesting concept, and I wish he had a chance to make that. You know, he's doing some interesting stuff producing, and it's neat that he's doing some stuff with his daughter, because I think she's pulled off some pretty interesting films. Hopefully she'll do something more interesting than the last couple she's done, but
yeah, she's definitely one to watch in the future.
Yeah,
and she comes from a lineage, so I mean, it's hard to not. Hopefully she doesn't stray too far from the tree, but
you know,
she's definitely somebody that can maybe carry that name forward. because it's definitely not going to be Nick Cage.
Yeah, no shit.
So, Martin Scorsese, since we've pretty much taken on the titans of the 80s, let's go with worst first. I mean, he's directed almost 60 movies at this point. What is his worst film?
Well, I thought that the I don't want to say it's his worst. The most pointless one he made was that the Shine a Light documentary on the Rolling Stones. Give it up. There's no reason to make that. Shutter Island is my least favorite of his movies.
Okay.
I fell asleep during. I don't even remember if I finished it. I fell asleep during it because I was really fucking bored by it, and I love Ruffalo. I think Ruffalo is really, really great. And DiCaprio, who I don't like as a whole, but I think he's done some interesting work with Scorsese. But it just did not mesh with me. I was bored to tears by it.
All right, so let's spin this a little bit differently than the other directors. What is his best film of the last, let's say, 25 years? Let's just go from 90 to 2014.
From 90? Well,
Goodfellas. So you're looking at what's that? Goodfellas.
Goodfellas.
Yeah.
I don't think there's any doubt about. And I'm very, very high on Bringing Out the Dead, and despite its shortcomings, I really, really love Gangs of New York.
I'm a big fan of both of those films that you mentioned, but I was also going to throw a little documentary in there because I really, really was profoundly surprised at George Harrison's Living in the Material World. I thought it was unbelievably well done.
Yeah, I've not seen it.
Oh, and it's gorgeous, yeah, dude.
Yeah, and you know, for me being a documentary guy, it's just one I haven't gotten around to.
And The Departed.
You know, for a remake, which I'm not terribly high on, it is a good remake. I still think that Infernal Affairs is the better of the two films.
I agree.
But he made it his own. He kept the crux of that story, but I think he translated it so well to the United States, and to especially the place where he set it, being in Boston, with using, you know, Whitey Bulger as the inspiration for Nicholson's character. I think that it's an interesting way to transform that particular story. I mean, the cast was out of this world. It's hard to deny from top to bottom. You know, even Mark Wahlberg was good. I liked Alec Baldwin. Martin Sheen, it was nice to see him doing his thing. I enjoy it. I will say it's I mean, for him to get his lone best picture or best director Oscar for that is really a tragedy, because there's probably I could say 7 or 8 films that he was far more deserving for.
At least. I agree. Where would you put Casino in the midst of the best and worst?
I've always had a very strong love for that movie, because I think it is a natural progression from Goodfellas to Casino. The fact that I do wish he would cast Irish people or Irish people as Irishmen in those movies, even though there's not too many of them in Casino, but Goodfellas in particular. Although it's hard to fault De Niro for playing the Jimmy Conway character, but I really like Casino. Sharon Stone was a little over the top, but you know, James Woods played such a creep so well, and you know, Pesci did Pesci as well as Pesci could do. I love the Frank Marino character. I wish I could remember the actor's name, because I absolutely loved him. But I love it. I mean, that's one that I can watch multiple times a year and not think twice about. I really enjoy it.
Yeah. So we're going to hit the devil here. Spielberg. Now I know it's going to be very easy for you to say his worst. So let's go with his best.
It'd be tough for me to pick out his worst, because he's made so many shitty ones.
He has.
At least lately. His best. His best is Schindler's List. If you want to think about technical aspects, story aspects, and actually getting decent performances out of people and actually having an impact, Schindler's List is the best. I love Indiana Jones and the Last Crusade.
Yep.
I think it's the best of the indie films.
Yeah, it is.
I've not, and I will preface this, I have not seen the Crystal Skull movie, nor will I ever watch that movie. So that one's out. But Jaws, I would put in that pantheon of great movies that he made. It is one that is still really fucking scary when you watch it.
Yeah. I'm a big fan of Empire of the Sun as well.
Yeah. It's a decent movie.
Yeah. So what's his worst? I mean, what is the worst film he's ever made?
The worst film he's ever made. Well, I thought AI was a shit pile. I thought that I just didn't like Catch Me If You Can. Really, if you go from Schindler's List forward, I think that they're all pretty bad.
Saving Private Ryan?
Saving Private Ryan has about 20 minutes. That the opening sequence is good, and the rest of it is just crappy, same old father figure pap bullshit. You know, it's he has the same formula to every movie that he makes, right? There's always that one character that assumes this fatherly type role that opens, you know, the world, or is this character that we have to heap all this praise on and try to identify with. And that's why I don't like his work with Tom Hanks, because that happens so often. So I just can't do it with Saving Private Ryan. I think the way that the opening of that film is shot is unbelievable. I talked the battle sequence, right, not the fucking crappy, sappy bullshit leading up to that. With the guy falling at the cross where the captain, whatever, I can't remember what Hanks' character is and naming that movie. Up to that part is just ridiculous. And you see that part and it is amazing. Because I think that most veterans that went through that battle would probably admit that that's probably the best or the most accurate representation of war in any movie. And I'd be hard pressed to discount that. But everything else that happens afterwards is just too much.
Well, for me,
just pure Spielberg.
Well, for me, I did see it in Crystal Skull. Fuck you, Spielberg. Worst movies ever made. Awful. And just, it's the perfect example of going to the well way too many times. And as much as I love Indy, he definitely is a trilogy. It will never be a fourth movie. As a matter of fact, when I got the box set, the fourth movie went flying into the trash.
Good for you.
The second I got it. So it is an incomplete, so I will never sell it. but if I ever did, you're not getting Crystal Skull with it, so deal with it.
Well, and the fact that he's making another one, he's trotting out that horse again, I can't. And he produces the Transformer movies. I mean, the stuff that he actually attaches his name to as a producer is just as bad.
Yeah,
you know, and it's not like he's trotting out great stuff. And he's redoing Gremlins, right? The Real Steel movies, the Halo movie. I mean, I just don't get it. I don't get it.
He's a moneymaker, man. He's got to make the money.
Well,
he's got to make the money, man.
He can also be a whore. That's why it's so good that he and Lucas are friends, because they're cut from the same cloth.
All right, a couple more directors, and we'll throw out a couple of your favorites. How about let's go with Tarantino.
QT, huh?
Worst movie.
His worst, Jesus, Kill Bill. Kill Bill 1 and 2.
Both? Wow.
Well, I hated them both.
Okay.
So I have not seen the Grindhouse movie that he did. So Death Proof I have not seen. So that's the only one in his directorial oeuvre that I have not seen. So yeah, I think that the Kill Bill movies are my least favorite of all of them. In fact, I downright loathe them. And frankly, when it was at that point where the indulgent part of him really took over. And I think you see it in the Grindhouse movie that he did, just at least in concept, right? You know, he's a man of supreme talent. And I frankly think he wastes it with the quirky character shit, like the pussy wagon thing and the Kill Bill movie and the sunglasses on the dashboard. You know, and the fact that he steeps all of his movies in all of these homages to directors, it's almost like he's just playing this fucking see if you can guess how smart or how many movies I've seen game. Pick them out. And if you can't, then you're not as smart as me.
I could see that actually, because you know he is that you know nerd from the video store that pretty much watched everything.
Right. So I just, you know, Reservoir Dogs is really, really good, and Pulp Fiction is, you know, I think most people would say that that's his best movie, and I'd be hard pressed to argue against that. Because I think they're great films. They had an edge that none of his other movies have. I really like Jackie Brown, and I'm probably in a minority there. But his movies after that, it's just too much cutesy shit. You know, I thought Bastards kind of got away from that a little bit, although he took that piece. I don't know if you've seen the original Inglourious Bastards.
I have.
It is fucking awful. And I mean, instead, that's another reason why I hated it that he took that. And although he made it his own, and it's really nothing like the original, but using that, it's just like he's getting real. The cutesy aspect of it just drives me nuts.
Yeah, but it's the two characters that saved that movie anyway. I mean, the acting in the film is—it's not his directing that saved *Inglourious Bastards*. I mean, Brad Pitt was fantastic, and Christoph Waltz was amazing, and actually, somewhat unknown Michael Fassbender was really, really great in the film as well.
I would agree. Even Mike Myers. I mean, he can get the talent. He has no problem doing that. And it's just the way that they're used, you know. And that's one thing that maybe we'll get to Wes Anderson or not.
Oh yeah.
That he gets all that talent, and then it just gets kind of squandered, you know. And I'll address that if Anderson is one of the ones. I'll bring him up if you don't. But I just have real issue with that. And he's obviously got a really good rapport with Christoph Waltz, and I think I could watch Waltz in any of the movies he made, because I thought he was really good in Django as well. And there are aspects of that movie that I liked. But I just, the over-the-top violence, you know, it's at this point in time in his career, I just don't see why. Right. You know, I mean, it's just like he holds on to that. And I know it's his trademark and all that, but it just... Show me something different, because I don't think that there's a lot of breadth in his oeuvre.
Yep.
And I'm sure he's fine with that, which is good. But to me, it's nice to see, even if it's a miss, even like Scorsese doing New York, New York, the musical, right? Even if it's a miss, that's still a very interesting movie.
Yeah.
And it's just, you don't see that. There is no breadth. It's a very thin set of lines for Tarantino and the area that he operates in. And I just wish that wasn't the case, because I think he's very talented.
So I only have two more for you. Terrence Malick.
Boy. Did Terrence Malick make a bad movie? I must have missed it if he did.
Well, I mean, I figured you would say The Thin Red Line would be your favorite movie.
Ooh, yeah, it's hard. I mean, Badlands is so fucking good.
Yeah.
And you know what? Days of Heaven is just as good. I think if you take his first four movies, right, Badlands, Days of Heaven, Thin Red Line, and The New World, they're so fucking good. And then he comes out with To the Wonder. I mean, are you kidding me?
I know.
I mean, not To the Wonder, Tree of Life. To the Wonder was okay. To the Wonder is the weakest of the films, but that's, I put that in the same kind of perspective as I put Scorsese making a bad movie, right? Even though I think Shutter Island was a big miss and I didn't like it at all. In the grand scheme of stuff, that's still a pretty goddamn good movie.
Yeah.
I feel the same way about To the Wonder. I don't think it didn't have quite the, I don't know, quite the gumption or quite the effect that the others did. Because I think Tree of Life was amazing. I mean, I think that's one of the...
Yeah, go ahead.
I loved it.
For me, I wasn't... I got lost a little bit with Tree of Life. I thought it was a good film, but I there was something about the film that, for me, I still say to this day when I talk to my wife about it, I say, well, it's been a couple times it's been on HBO, and I've said, I'm going to watch it again. I think it may have been whatever was going on at that moment and the reason why I didn't like it. Or maybe it was me projecting the fact of what I wanted from his film.
Yeah.
And I think it was one of those things where I may have had such an expectation that there was no way that he was going to be able to fulfill it.
Yeah.
And it's possible that that's what I felt when I saw Tree of Life. Badlands for me is his best.
It's pretty good, dude. Pretty good.
Yeah. I mean, I'm not sure you can get any better than that.
Well, I just, you know, if like I said, even The New World, which a lot of people either missed or maybe didn't care for, has really, really interesting stuff. And there's a reason that he gets people to be in his movies, because they really get to flex, right? They really get to flex. And the really shitty part is he films so much and you don't get to see so much of what was filmed. He could probably make 6 or 7 films out of the movies that he's shooting for these.
Right.
And these omnibus films that he's coming out with, like The Knight of Cups, and even to some extent the To the Wonder kind of had that same feel, where all those people are in the movie and you never know what's going to end up in the movie. I mean, Sean Penn famously has made mention that his portion of I'm drawing a blank, Tree of Life, the great bulk of it is nowhere to be found, which just I just about kill for other cuts of all these movies. Now, it's rumored that Criterion will be releasing The New World with at least one additional cut that's never been seen before, one of the 4 or 5 hour cuts, which bring it on.
I would see that again. I would really enjoy that.
Yeah, I love that movie. I think it's fantastic. So I'm pretty jacked about that as a possibility.
So my last director that I have for you, and I'll open it up to a few for you from you, would be Stanley Kubrick.
I'm actually glad you brought him up. If you want to start, go ahead, and then I'll say my piece.
No, I'm ready for you. Because okay. You know what I'm going to say. I mean, my favorite is Clockwork Orange.
I would actually put that as my least favorite of Kubrick's movies.
Interesting.
There's a couple of reasons as to why that's the case. The first time I saw Clockwork Orange, I was 8 years old.
Oh.
So I was completely traumatized by it. So I have a bad connection with that one. And 2001 is exactly the same thing. I saw the movie way too young. Obviously my parents weren't doing a good enough job of tracking what it was that I was watching, but, I have not seen 2001 in maybe, I'm going to age myself here, 30 years. So, it is one that I have on my list to go back and see, but I'm not a fan of either of those. And he's kind of an every other film guy with me, or at least he was at the end of his career. Mm-hmm. So I loved Full Metal Jacket. I guess that's not true. I really just don't like 2001 and Clockwork Orange. I'm not going to lie. As far as his best, it's really, really hard. I think that The Killing is amazing.
Mm-hmm.
Strangelove is the best to me. Paths of Glory is so good. Lolita is so good. Spartacus is so good. Barry Lyndon is a really interesting movie. And I wish he had the technology to make that movie the way he wanted to. And I love Full Metal Jacket. I think that's an incredible war movie. I don't think it stands up to the ones that I mentioned earlier, but I think it had a different take on Vietnam that you didn't see in Platoon or Casualties of War or Apocalypse Now. I think it addressed, you know, the way soldiers were dealing with their experience in a much different way than other films of that kind of ilk. And I really enjoyed it. I hated Eyes Wide Shut.
Yeah,
I saw it on opening night. I was at in Harvard Square when I was living in Boston, and packed the house. I had a ticket to go see Run Lola Run, and I skipped it to go see Eyes Wide Shut because some friends of mine got me a ticket to get in, and I was bored to tears. I didn't feel it, you know?
Yeah, I agree with you on that one. Dr. Strangelove is an interesting film for me because, like you, seeing Clockwork Orange and traumatizing you at 8 years old. I remember seeing that film early on in my young years and remembering believing that the world might come to an end. Mm-hmm. And that, like, literally, this is what, well, I have, you know, this is what's going to happen in the future. And I think it was one of those, it may have been the first apocalyptic film that I had ever witnessed. And yes, it's more of a comedy and this, that, and the other thing. But it definitely, I think it's just the subject matter of itself had a little bit of a, you know, it's like that insane general. He's going to pull the trigger and, you know, the nuclear holocaust. And there's all these people sitting in a room that are making the decision on whether to, you know, basically end the world. And I think that thought of power sent this really weird vibe through my psyche for the rest of my life when it came to power. And maybe that's why I hate fucking politicians now.
Well, I came to Strangelove later in my life. I was mortified and absolutely frightened of nuclear war as a kid, as children of the 80s. And you're just a little bit older than I am, especially after The Day After came out in 83, in November of 83. It was real palpable. And seeing that movie really affected me. And I was exceedingly frightened of nuclear war as a kid, because it was on the new year, all the saber rattling between Reagan and the triumvirate of Russian premiers that were in charge of Russia until Gorbachev, they all kept dying and we weren't sure what the hell was going to happen. It was a pretty scary time. I mean, a lot of people look at the 80s and think what a cheesy fucking time it was with the bad hair and the bad music and all that stuff. But it was really quite scary, at least to me. So coming to Strangelove and seeing that movie, it put a different perspective on it. I mean, like I said, I was in high school when I saw it for the first time, and it was nice to be able to laugh at it because I had never been able to do that before. So I think that's one of the reasons why I connected with it so much. And I mean, not to mention the fact that Peter Sellers, one of the funniest people in the history of all movies, as far as I'm concerned, is so fucking funny in that movie. It's just the absurdity of it, which I obviously, mimic the absurdity of the arms race and all the bullshit in the Cold War. It just hit the right note, and I've cherished that movie ever since I saw it for the first time. So I love it, and I will praise Kubrick forever for that. He gets the free pass for Clockwork Orange in 2001, even though I know those are iconic great films in the grand pantheon of film history. They just don't work for me.
I remember my brother showed me the nude bomb after I saw Dr. Strangelove. I think it was probably to make me feel better that the fact that there could be possibly a bomb that made women lose their pants. So
there you go. Perfect. If only.
All right, so give me your directors. Give me all three. Right.
This one's for Slayton, Kevin Smith.
Oh, you know my worst. Tusk, piece of shit. Fuck you, Brad. It's just such a bad movie. From every aspect of it, it's such a bad movie. And like I said before, I can't stress this enough. I laughed my ass off at the podcast when they came up with the story. Okay, so I was originally a fan of the actual story and the insanity of the story. And I think it was just the fact that I remembered and I projected sort of again, like I like to do a lot. And nothing that I projected could have possibly been what I wanted it to be. And there's no way that Tusk could have succeeded with me.
I did that one for Brad. So
my favorite, though, Jesus. Oh, my God. I would probably get killed for saying this. But Jay and Silent Bob Strike Back, just for the fact of the Mark Hamill cock knocker scene.
You're killing me, dude.
Now, Clerks, of course.
You're killing me. Let me see. For his movies, then, there are quite a few of them that I have not seen. I hated Jim. Silent Bob Strikes Back. So,
Cockknocker, man.
That might have been the last one of his that I saw. Let me look. I have to look him up. That's sad that I can't. I didn't see Jersey Girl, Clerks 2, Cop Out, Zack and Mary, Red State. So Dogma, I take it back. Oh, I guess Jay and Silent Bob was the last one I saw. So that was my least favorite of the ones that I've seen. Yeah, Clerks is iconic. I saw that when I was a freshman in college. I took friends to see it, even, and they were so mad at me for taking them to see a black and white movie at first. But by the end of it, and this is something that we still reminisce about, how impressed they were that I would actually take them to see a movie, because these people don't watch movies that are like that at all. So, but I love Mallrats too.
I love
Mallrats. So.
Would you like a chocolate-covered pretzel, Jeremy?
No, thank you. Just don't stink palm me. But I love the Brody character. I mean, he really is indulgent in his writing in that movie with all of the big talk and the big words and all that stuff. It does get old, but just the setup and the Brody character in general is enough to – it just captured my heart. I really connected with that character, and – enjoy as a 20-year-old man, because that's how old I was when it came out, that it made sense that I would like that. It's not the strongest film in the grand scheme of it all, but it is good. And he did interesting stuff in Chasing Amy and Dogma. I don't think that they were as strong as a whole. And I think that Chasing Amy gets a little preachy, and, you know, Dogma has some really smart moments in it, surprisingly enough, just a little too much in the whole. So I actually just grabbed Clerks 2, so I'll watch that because I want to see Randall again. And then I can't wait to see Tusks. Tusks, just so I could at least relate to either one of you guys about how good or how bad it really is.
It's going to be one of us. One of you, you're going to, it's the dark side or the light, man.
Right. Right. So next one we'll do Wes Anderson.
All right. So my favorite Wes Anderson film is The Life Aquatic with Steven Zissou. I think that's Bill Murray's actual, in the Wes Anderson world, I think that's Bill Murray's best role. I just think he's fantastic in that film. And Angelica Houston, who I really liked in Royal Tenenbaums, I thought she was really good as Steve's wife in the film. And Kate Blanchett is just fantastic in everything she does.
I agree.
Worst is a tough one for me. Because I really didn't hate any of them. But if you really put a gun in my head and made me choose one of them that I had to get rid of, I would probably get rid of Moonrise Kingdom.
I will echo that. When Moonrise Kingdom came out, that I ranked all seven of them on my blog, and that's the one that I ranked it at the lowest end. Now, I will preface this by saying it's still a wonderful movie, but when put in the context of his over, I think it's the weakest. In a number of ways. I think it's a wonderful love story, one of the better ones that's been done in the last 10 years, and it's not some sappy piece of shit like The Notebook or, you know, dare I even invoke Nicholas Sparks' bullshit writing.
Never. On this podcast, sorry. Motherfucker.
Yeah, sorry, my bad. I think that Grand Budapest was a really nice return to form for him. Rush, it doesn't get any better than Rushmore. As far as I would put Rushmore in my top 20 movies of all time. It is the perfect confluence of, I think, all parts of filmmaking, from acting. I think that's definitely Bill Murray's strongest performance, maybe of all time, in a dramatic role. We'll put it that way, even more so than Lost in Translation, mm-hmm. and even this year's St. Vincent, which I thought he was really good in. The bursting onto the scene of Jason Schwartzman as an actor of great comedic value. I think it's the best written of all of the Anderson movies because it didn't get too fucking cutesy, which I think he really does angle towards after that. And I think it's got the best soundtrack that was so well integrated into the film. Whereas I think in Royal Tenenbaums, he kind of went off the deep end with trying to make the cool soundtrack to go with the movie. And I think that having Olivia Williams in the Miss Cross role was a really great touch because she wasn't a known actress, at least here in the United States. I know she was in The Sixth Sense, but in the grand scheme of it all, she wasn't really known for her acting here.
Right.
And I think that she brought a charm that few actresses could have done in that particular role. So to me, I think it was the best all around. And it's hard for me to pass up Bottle Rocket because, you know, we mentioned Polanski's Knife in the Water just is a great, you know, film for a first film. Bottle Rocket, if you compare it from the short that it was made from, it is so much better and it's so much more lush. And it has edges to it, whereas I think Rushmore is a little bit, you know, more well-rounded. But I think the edges give it a character that none of the other films have. And I love it so much. I think both of those are just really incredible.
Who's a better who's the more perfect muse for Wes Anderson, Schwartzman or Bill Murray?
Well, here's the thing. I mean, he's really only had the two films with Murray as the main character, right? And frankly, with Schwartzman, it's only the one. So I think he underuses Bill Murray in every other movie outside of Zissou and Rushmore. You know, the Royal Tenenbaums was a throwaway character. Moonrise Kingdom, it just didn't utilize him. Same with Darjeeling, and same with Grand Budapest. You know, he was featured somewhat prominently in Fantastic Mr. Fox, but, you know, as a voice actor, it's a bit different, right? So I just, I like how he used Schwartzman in Fantastic Mr. Fox as well. I think it played well to his strengths as an actor, even though it was voice. And I guess he was in Darjeeling Limited, but he wasn't the focal point, right? That was more Owen Wilson's film. So I think that the two roles that he wrote for Bill Murray as the lead are the stronger of the ones, if you're comparing him and Schwartzman.
Great. All right, one more.
One more? One more?
Give me one more!
Oh, man, so many good ones. Well, I'm going to throw a kind of a curveball here.
All right.
I'm going to throw a David Gordon Green.
Ooh.
Because I am such a huge, huge fan of his first three movies, and then he went off the fucking deep end. Your Highness is one of these worst fucking movies. I would put it in the top five worst movies I've ever seen in my life.
But he did make Joe this year.
A fine return to his roots. And it is a good movie. It doesn't compare with George Washington, which is lovely. All the Real Girls is just insane how good it is.
Yeah.
And even Undertow, which is probably the least seen of his movies, is really fantastic. And if you've seen Night of the Hunter, the great Charles Laughton movie with Robert Mitchum and Shelley Duvall, not Shelley Duvall, Shelley Winters, good God, how did I make that mistake? It's a nice homage to that movie. It is really, really incredible. I loved it. I saw that film at the Chicago International Film Festival right before it came out in its small release. And Gordon Green was there and did a really, really fantastic Q&A session. He was there for about half an hour, and he did a great job of talking about his process and talking about the films that influenced him and how he was making movies with his friends and how that's what he wanted to do. And I had such great hope, and he is just tanked it.
Yeah.
For me, I just, Your Highness and Pineapple Express. Maybe it's the fact that I'm not a stoner and that I can't connect to that type of humor, but they're just fucking stupid. And it breaks my heart because this is a guy, he's not a kid anymore. This is a guy that has talent coming out of his ears. And, you know, and he's involved with some really interesting stuff. You know, he did Prince Avalanche, which was a lovely movie. And he did, he produced Shotgun Stories. I don't know if you've seen that. The Jeff Nichols movie with Michael Shannon in it.
No, I have not seen that one.
Pitch Perfect. I would highly suggest that film. So, you know, at least, I guess that's the good thing, is that he was still maintaining his touch there. And Snow Angels was the movie he did after Undertow, based on the Stuart Onan book, which it's a heartbreaking movie. It really, really is. And he did a great job with that. But you could see him kind of trailing away. That movie has Kate Beckinsale and Sam Rockwell in it, who I really, really love.
Yeah.
But, you know, once he gets into Pineapple Express, Your Highness, The Sitter, you know, he's lost it. And then Eastbound and Down, which is a funny show. But I just felt like it was a waste of his talent. And I know the reason why he did it. He was doing that because he was working with the guys he knew from North Carolina when he was in college and growing up there. So I get it. And I understand that guys want to do their thing, right? They want to branch out and do comedy and do these serious things. But, you know, I think he was the guy that I thought would pick up the mantle for Terrence Malick, right? And he hasn't delivered on that after his first three films.
Well, you know, I'm going to go with All the Real Girls because of Bust Ass.
Yeah. One of the greatest character names in the history of, and it's the fact, I mean, and I really loved Danny McBride in that role, and he hadn't done anything before that, as far as I know, at least I'd never seen him. I was like, man, you know, I really kind of hope that this guy does well. And well, obviously that,
yeah,
that worked out for him.
Well, Shea Whigham's in it too. He plays Tip, and he's also, for people that don't recognize the name, he was Eli Thompson in Boardwalk Empire for the last five seasons. I believe he was in Wolf of Wall Street.
He wasn't. He was in American Hustle.
American Hustle, yeah. American Hustle.
Yeah, he played the guy who was the connection to Jeremy Renner's character, the mayor. Yeah. He's an interesting guy. He was in Wrist Cutters, A Love Story, which I thought was a really interesting little movie. Yeah, Shea Whigham's an interesting guy. He's an interesting character. I think he has some interesting films that he's been in.
And he's going to be in Agent Carter starting January 6th on ABC. Marvel's Agents of Carter, whatever.
Well, there you go. Yeah, look at that.
Haley Atwell, who's just an absolutely amazingly gorgeous person and just perfect.
Quite smitten with her myself. I'm going to throw one more out there, dude.
Do it.
I'm sorry I got to do it, but we got to get Paul Thomas Anderson into the mix. We can't have this conversation about it. And I'm going to say this. The man has not made a bad movie, so I'm not going to say there's not. I guess if I had one that I liked least, it would probably be Punch Drunk Love, but that's a hard one to even to quantify. My favorite movie of his is not the one that I think is his. Yeah, it is. Magnolia is the best one he's made. And There Will Be Blood is so fucking good. It is so good. The Master is so good. Heartache is so good. And Boogie Nights is so good. I mean, he has not had a single misstep, and I'm so pumped for Inherent Vice that I could just scream, and it's not playing in Bloomington starting this weekend. I know you get to see it either this week or next, you bitch. But
Saturday night, maybe.
Yeah, man. It's a 4-hour trip to the closest one screening that I could get to, and it just, as much as I'd love to see it, I'm just going to wait because I will get there at some point.
Come on, that's a sacrifice. Because even if it does come out, it's going to be in late January, so you'll see it at least 5 weeks before it comes out.
My wife would punch me if I did that, man. I can't.
She would understand.
I don't think she would.
Well, I'm going to say There Will Be Blood is my favorite Paul Thomas Anderson film. I have zero qualms with saying that because it was one of my favorite films of the last 10 years. So definitely There Will Be Blood. I am ashamed to say that I've never made it through The Master.
What?
I have seen...
What's your problem?
Well, let's put it this way. My wife loves the film. And every time we sit down to watch it, there's something else that comes up. One day I will get through the 2.5 hours of Philip Seymour Hoffman and Joaquin Phoenix, but right now I have not gotten through the whole thing. But I am in the agreement with you that if I had to choose one, it would definitely be Punch Drunk Love. If I had to make one, but I agree with you also that he's pretty much made not a bad film in his entire repertoire. And there's very few directors we can talk about to say that.
Very few. I would agree with that. It helps that he takes time between his movies too. At least he's putting effort into the thoughts about it, but.
Yeah. And I know I took a bunch of bullshit from you that Magnolia wasn't in my top 10 of the 1990s.
Oh, Jesus. One of these days I'll get around. I actually have the beginnings of my retort lists for both the 80s and the 90s.
Yeah.
See, I think the difference between you and me is when we make those lists, you call them the best movies, but really it's the movies that you like the most.
Yeah, and that's what it really comes down to for me.
Whereas I think I can do a pretty good job of separating. I know that Weird Science is not the best movie of the 1980s, but I would put it up there as one of my favorites because I love it so dearly. But I can't put that there. So my list will be addressing the subject in a different way. So listeners, be on the lookout for these because they're going to come fairly soon.
Man, we are becoming the site of best ofs.
That would be good.
And check out my best of TV 2014 and my best of, we'll have our best of and worst movies of 2014 list coming up and the best of Pamela Anderson movies. And
so many good ones. I tell you so many good ones.
The best of Pauly Shore and Chris Kattan.
Oh, Jesus. I'm out on those. Sorry.
So that's what we got for this evening. So hopefully you can give us some of your favorite directors and best and worst of their careers. We'd love to hear. Check it out. Let us know at Real News Daily on Twitter, Real News Daily and The Real Big Show on Facebook. Or you can just check us out at realnewsdaily.com and read all your favorite reviews and news, movie news from Jeremy, myself, Liz, Melissa. So that's all we got for you this week. Jeremy, hopefully we don't have to wait a couple months for you to come back. But we will entice you with a nice, fun topic in the next couple of weeks. I promise you of that.
Do I get to bash Julia Roberts?
You can bash the shit out of her.
Yep.
But we're going to make you watch Osage County while you do it.
Dude, I can't do that.
So if we don't get a chance to talk to you, have a Merry Christmas. And we will see you soon. And listeners, we will see you next week with a brand new topic and probably a brand new group of wonderful guests. So I'm Mike Petrelli for Jeremy Harmon. We'll see you later. Around. Peace out.
Bye.